A man charged in the death of an Alaska barista has killed himself, and authorities say he was linked to at least seven other possible slayings in three other states. Israel Keyes was found dead in his Anchorage jail cell yesterday morning. Officials say it was a suicide. Keyes was facing a March trial in federal court for the murder of 18-year-old Samantha Koenig, who was abducted from an Anchorage coffee kiosk last February. He was later arrested in Texas after using the victim's debit card. Authorities say Keyes confessed to killing Bill and Lorraine Currier of Essex, Vermont. The couple was reported missing in June of last year. Authorities also say Keyes indicated that he killed four others in Washington State and one person in New York State, but did not give the victims' names. Pacific halibut stocks show some signs of responding to several years of cuts to the commercial catch, and that's good news according to the scientists with the International Pacific Halibut Commission. The bad news is more cuts could be coming for next year. The IPHC met in Seattle last week and heard reports on halibut fisheries in the United States and Canada and an assessment of halibut numbers in the Pacific. Joe Vicnicki has more on the story.
The IPHC recommends annual catch limits for halibut fishing fleets in the western U.S., Alaska, and British Columbia. Declining halibut stocks have meant big reductions in the commercial catch.
And what this is indicating to me is that the scientific results, whether based on models or data, have all been showing a strong decline in the stock over the last decade, and that management's responded very closely to that information.
That's Ian Stewart, an IPHC scientist who outlined historical catch levels and stock estimates at the commission's interim meeting in November. Scientists have been concerned that past estimates of halibut numbers and corresponding harvest rates have been set too high. That, they say, contributed to the declines. Stewart described a graph that noted some good news about stock numbers this year.
The stock was declining under a period when we think, in retrospect, the harvest rate was above the target. And that, given that if we've selected a target that's quite reasonable, that's what we would expect to happen when we harvest in excess of the target, that the stock would decline. What's important and what's cause for optimism here is that we see the 2012 point and backing up to 2011 that's connected to it and the point above it, we see that as that harvest rate has been brought down toward the target, the decline in the stock has actually slowed and even reversed slightly in 2012. So again, that's good news.
Despite that good news, commercial catch levels in many of the areas may not be headed upward anytime soon. Stewart told the commission that scientists are still not seeing large numbers of young fish growing to commercial catch size. Because of the commission's concerns over the uncertainty of halibut stock assessments, the staff this year changed the way it presents its catch recommendations. Instead of proposing single numbers for catch levels in each area, Stewart outlined a chart that showed a range of coastwide harvest options. One option, highlighted by a blue line, would allow a total commercial catch of 22.7 million pounds. That would be a 33% reduction overall.
That is essentially what the catch advice would have been in previous years. This year, we're going to present you with more information, both in terms of relative risk probabilities associated with that and other levels, as well as the risk associated with different management alternatives.
Under that blue line option, Southeast Area 2C would be going up by about 500,000 pounds. Other areas like 3A and the Central Gulf of Alaska would see a drop of more than 2.5 million pounds under that scenario. But that's just one possibility. As part of the new format this year, staffers offered alternatives that ranged from no fishing coastwide to much higher harvest rates, which could lead to bigger reductions in future years. Commission Chair Michael Pearson of Canada asked for some clarification from IPHC Director Bruce Lehman.
It's not staff advice, the blue line. It's the blue line is a reference to, in previous years, what would have been staff advice. Now we're looking at a table which is basically, here are the various options we have to look at as commissioners, including what would have been in previous years as staff advice. But I think it'd be fair to say, Bruce, it's not as if the staff is saying to us, our view is you must choose, not must choose, that you should be choosing the blue line. Is that correct to say, Ian and Bruce?
I think the best statement you made, Mr. Chairman, was that this represents simply the application of the current harvest policy to the results of the 2012 assessment.
Pearson also noted the need for a better explanation of why additional catch reductions are needed in light of some of the positive data.
So on the one hand, that kind of information is saying things look like they're getting better. But on the other hand, and people will nonetheless, regardless, focus on the blue line, saying they're still talking about a possible reduction of 40% in the catch. So I think there's going to be some need for people to have a better understanding of how to reconcile what seems to be contradictory information. I know you've tried to do that, but I suspect there may be need to further think that through this so people fully understand.
Pearson also asked for more information about the various alternatives and what they could mean for catch levels in each of the regulatory areas. That information could help the commissioners make their decision on the commercial halibut catch during the IPHC annual meeting in late January in Victoria, British Columbia. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
Shell Oil has been building and testing equipment designed for the Arctic Ocean in Puget Sound. And in September, a key test of underwater oil spill equipment was a spectacular failure. It forced the energy giant to postpone Arctic oil drilling until next summer. Shell and federal regulators have been tight-lipped about the failed test, but Freedom of Information requests reveal what happened beneath the surface of Puget Sound. John Ryan reports from KUOW in Seattle.
Before Shell can drill for oil in the Arctic Ocean, it needs to prove to federal officials that it's able to clean up a massive oil spill there. That proof hinges on a barge being built in Bellingham called the Arctic Challenger. The barge is only one component of Shell's plans for handling oil spills off the remote north coast of Alaska, but the Obama administration won't let oil drilling get underway until the 36-year-old barge and its brand-new oil spill equipment are in place. On board the Arctic Challenger is something that looks kind of like an underwater vacuum cleaner. It's called a containment dome. If efforts to cap a blown-out well don't work, the dome can capture spewing oil and funnel it to a tanker near the surface. The Arctic Challenger passed several Coast Guard tests for seaworthiness, but it was a different story when its oil spill system was put to the test near Anacortes. A federal agency known as BSEE, that's the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement, required that test. According to BSEE internal emails, the containment dome test was supposed to take about a day. But on the first day, the massive steel dome comes unhooked from some winches used to maneuver it underwater. Shell has to recover it and repair it. On the second day, a remote-controlled submarine gets snagged in some anchor lines. It takes divers about 24 hours to untangle it. But on the fifth day, the test has its worst accident. It's a dead calm Friday night, and BSEE official Mark Fessmeyer is on board the Challenger. He's watching underwater video being sent back from the remote control submarine. A little after midnight, the video screen suddenly fills with bubbles. The 20-foot-tall containment dome then shoots to the surface. The massive white dome breached like a whale, in Mark Fessmeyer's words. Then it sinks back down. About 12 hours later, the crew of the Challenger manages to get the dome back to the surface. Its top half has been crushed like a beer can, again in Mark Fessmeyer's words. Spokespeople for Shell and for BSEE declined to answer questions or allow interviews about the mishaps. In an email, Shell spokeswoman Kelly Optuve said the dome was damaged when a faulty electrical connection caused it to descend too quickly. Environmentalists say the Arctic Challenger's multiple problems show that Shell isn't prepared for an Arctic oil spill. One of those environmentalists is Todd Guyton. He lives on Seahome Hill in Bellingham. His condo overlooks the port where the Challenger has been under construction for a year now.
Just look out our window and there it is.
He says the top half of the steel dome came back from its sea trial crumpled like a piece of paper.
It failed in very calm, tranquil conditions in the best time of the year up here in the Pacific Northwest. And if it can't handle the best we have here, I really have my doubts that it could handle even a little adversity in the Arctic.
2 months later, Shell is still rebuilding the dome. The company wouldn't say when the Arctic Challenger will be ready for testing again. Earlier in November, the Obama administration called for more research into handling oil spills in the far north. The Arctic Research Commission said oil spill tests need to be done in the Arctic Ocean and that federal regulators need more staff or more time to properly vet proposals for offshore drilling at the top of the world. I'm John Ryan in Seattle.